You'll find it in our archive at bigpicturescience.org.
And if you're a podcast listener but prefer listening to over-the-air radio because it was once the hot new thing, or simply because your radio sits next to your lava lamp, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, consider letting them know you like the show.
And if you listen to our show via iTunes, we invite you to leave a review on our iTunes page.
And to reach us directly with your comments, be sure to throw in some faint praise and then email it all to bigpicturescience@seti.org.
They sounded like stomping on the ground. It wasn't that loud, but it was from the plant eaters. Like, they would stomp pretty loud. The more smaller it is, the more it doesn't stomp.
This is WHFR Dearborn. You are listening to The Magic of Radio.
When something goes silent, it's not always good.
That's a maxim held by scientists who study geologic forces.
A report from a national...
The performing arts are an important facet of life. There's no substitute for the relationship between audience and performer. The Henry Ford College Theater Arts Associates degree program offers a wide variety of classes for the beginner with no experience, as well as seasoned professionals who wish to improve their skills. Theater classes can be found on the HFC website under THEA at the hfcc.edu web advisor. Sign up today to begin or expand your future in the performing arts. Call 313-845-6478 or go to theater.hfcc.edu online for more information now. That's 313-845-6478 or go to theater.hfcc.edu.
And speaking of theater, welcome to Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. The views and opinions expressed on Impact are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn. Hi, I'm your host, Lynn, and today we're discussing HFC Theater Arts with Jerry Jublinski, HFC Adjunct Theater Instructor, Technical Director, and Resident Scenic Designer. Jerry, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I can't wait to talk about all things theta and find out what all is going on. Past, present, what's coming, et cetera, et cetera. First of all, tell us a little bit or a lot about you.
In 1982, I think it was, I got a call from Dr. George Popovich, who was then the head of theater. He's just recently retired. And he wanted me to come in and movement coach of the horses for a production of Equus. Equus is about a boy who works in a stable, and there's six actors who have to portray the horses. And so, as movement was one of my specialties, I came in and did that, and shortly afterwards was invited to be on the faculty. And since I had a young family, I was eager to stop touring, and I jumped at the chance to come and teach, which I'd done a little bit of before. And I've been here now 30 years on the faculty and 18 years as the technical director. My undergrad degree is in communications and learning environments, and my master's is in directing.
Okay. What exactly does a technical director do?
Well, the technical director is the second director of the show. The director works primarily with the actors, although he or she is always involved with all aspects of the production. But the technical director works with all aspects of the technical production. So for the live stage, that means scenery, props, lighting, costumes, makeup, special effects, and sound. Now, of course, one person can't do all of that, so there are crew heads or designers or assistants who supervise some of those particular areas. But the technical director is responsible for making sure that all of the technical elements come together to support the show.
Okay, so as an audience member, we're going to know if something goes sideways.
Well, that's the challenge of live theater, mm-hmm. whether it's be with the actors or with technical issues. But obviously, we work in rehearsals and preparation to try to ensure that that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, an actor can knock a glass off of a table and it can break, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lighting instrument, the lamp can go out. The computer control for lighting or sound can go down. You know, obviously, like in any area, something can go wrong. When small things go wrong, you just ignore it and mm-hmm. go on. If something big goes wrong, well, you may occasionally have to stop or postpone a performance.
Mm-hmm. And that can happen anywhere.
Sure.
I remember the lights going out. I can't remember where I was. I was downtown, and it was Lauren Bacall.
Mm-hmm.
And the theater just went black.
Yes.
And so for a moment, I thought, this is part of. And then when she said something, it's, this is not part of. And so somebody had to hustle. So what's one of the most, I guess I'd say, dramatic moments that you've had where something didn't go quite the way you had intended?
Well, it was actually on another campus. We were in the opening night of a show, and the light board, which is a computer-controlled device, stopped working completely. So the lights did go out.
Okay.
They came back on, but the computer control was no longer functioning, so we had to simply turn the regular lights on to finish the performance.
Oh, this was after a number of minutes, hours, what have you?
Oh, it was about a third of the way through the show.
Oh, geez. Okay.
So,
okay.
You know, and you know, everyone thought, well, gosh, they didn't prepare very well. Well. There were absolutely no problems with the light board during the final rehearsals. And like any computer, like any machine, it just decided that it wasn't no longer going to work. And it just happened to be during opening night.
Oh, jeez. So how was that all resolved?
Well, we had to get a replacement board and get that one fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you always have contingency plans, or you always have older equipment set aside in storage for just those moments when you may need it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what you have to do. Right. So sometimes you may have to borrow something. We had an actor here. During one of our morning matinees from one of our Theater for Young Audiences productions,
mm-hmm.
who overslept. We couldn't wake them up, and so the stage manager had to go on stage for them in that performance. And that, of course, is an old tradition in theater. Sometimes someone goes on. Sometimes it's an understudy. That is, a person who is prepared to go on, who has memorized the part, who's rehearsed it. Sometimes it's just someone who's available,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
who has to step in. We did a production here of Oliver, the musical version of Oliver Twist.
Mm-hmm.
And after opening night, the man who was playing Bill Sykes was in an auto accident and got a hairline fracture in his pelvis. So I was the director, and so I was the person who knew the part the best. So I spent, I got the call at 2 or 3 that morning, and so I slept very little that night, and I rehearsed both the lines, the staging, and the two songs that he did. And I went on that night and the following night and performed them. And then in the ensuing week, I taught the role to a student who was in the show, who had some smaller roles, and then he took over that role. So we try to make everything into a learning experience,
mm-hmm.
because that happens in in professional theater as well.
Definitely.
Where you have problems, injuries, illnesses, unexpected events, and someone has to step in so that the production can continue.
Mm-hmm. The show must go on.
That's the old adage, yes.
And I noticed in your bio that you did some studying with Marcel Marceau.
Yes, I was very, very fortunate because I had trained a bit in movement in London when I was an undergraduate and had a bit of dance training. But Marcel Marceau was always my idol in terms of movement mm-hmm. practitioners. And he was doing an extended workshop for both beginning and intermediate students. I was in the intermediate class at the University of Michigan at the School of Music while I was in my study for my master's degree. So I auditioned and I got in, and it was a very grueling but very rewarding 10 days of study mm-hmm. with not only the master, but also Stefan Jagielkowski, who was a former Mr. Poland and also a member of the Warsaw Mime Ensemble, who was now a solo artist, who came in as a guest instructor. And that was, and he worked in a very, very different style than Marceau did. Marceau was very classical, and Stefan was much more modern. And so we had the good fortune to work with him as well mm-hmm. and get his perspective on the movement work, and also got a chance to see him perform. He did a performance at the Performance Network in Ann Arbor for us. And so it was a tremendous, tremendous experience. I wrote a 100-page manual, technique manual. I took notes during the workshop as part of my master's degree study and wrote that manual so that I could, you know, you can't remember everything in an intensive thing like that. I wanted to remember as much as I could. Sure. So I took as many notes as I could, and I wrote the manual as part of my my master's study.
Wow. Wow is all I can say. Wow. I wonder. I don't know if some of the listeners perhaps are not aware of who he is.
Well,
was.
He's passed now,
he
yes.
He was, yeah.
But he was performing into his 70s.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the world's foremost movement artists in what was called pantomime, which has kind of been given, unfortunately, a bad name, but it's a wonderful movement art form through which the actor tells a story, becomes multiple characters without speaking a single word.
Mm-hmm.
Music, props, if you want them, although illusion is often used. And he studied in turn with masters from his generation. And he popularized the art form because he toured worldwide as a solo performer for many years and became internationally known, and also appeared on television on several shows here in the United States as well as in Europe, and so preserved that ancient art form that actually started pre the Greek theater era.
Really?
You know, the Greek theater used a mime and mimicry, but mime and mimicry goes back to ancient rituals from all over the world where not professional actors, but members of a community or members of the ritual creation class would perform rituals for the tribe or group, using masks, using music, using dance, sometimes using some words as well, of course, or vocal music, but predominantly through movement, tell a story or reenact an event,
mm-hmm.
Whether it be something like the hunt, going out on the hunt, or whether it be a religious ritual.
Mm-hmm. The white face makeup that we associate with Marcel Marceau.
Mm-hmm.
Is that for lack of a better term, is that sort of standard for pantomime or...
Well, it used to be.
Okay.
It used to be because the pantomimes in the 18th century were performed on very, or in very large theaters. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to make sure that the people in the back saw all your facial expressions, which of course were crucial since you didn't say anything.
Right.
Then you had to make that face visible. And so that's how it was done.
Okay.
Now, in the 20th century, many artists have moved away from that to a more naturalistic look or to a stylized look, depending on what they're doing. Martha Graham used masks and stylized makeup in her dance shows where some of the dancers basically played a mime role. And so there's lots of ways to do it, mm-hmm. right? But that white face street mimes were very popular in the 60s, 70s, 80s. I don't know, you know, if they are now. I haven't been in touch with that. But and they wore white face traditionally and a brightly colored costume so that you could identify them as a street performer. You know immediately who they were. And again, you could see their facial expressions from a distance. You didn't have to be up close. And so the street mime work was often done in whiteface as well. And some of it still is done in whiteface, depending on who's doing it and for what purpose and in what kind of performance space.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We see the live models or sometimes the people that are all silver.
Oh, you're talking about the living statues
the
mannequins.
Right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. That's a descendant of pantomime.
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. Right. The statuary or the living statues, right? The French term is, vivant. Oh, I can't remember. But it's French for living statue,
okay.
Right?
Right.
And so you have an actor who holds a pose as if they were a mannequin for a sustained period of time, mm-hmm. Or uses that device as part of a more elaborate act. And sometimes the entire body is painted. Sometimes the body is painted silvered in order to represent like a robot or a machine man, or is done in white face or is done in normal garb. Mm-hmm. Right. I did it in store windows occasionally, right?
Okay.
Where I was next to actual mannequins and I would be a living mannequin and then people would come by and then I would move a little bit and then people would become startled and say, oh, did you see that? The mannequin, is he real? Right. You know, so there were a lot of fun things like that.
Oh, that does sound like a lot of fun. Let's see. And you also have some grants and awards for various stage performances and. So would you like to talk about that a little bit?
Well, I've been very fortunate to work under two National Endowment for the Arts grants. I did not win them myself. I was subcontracted.
Okay.
by the first one was Jackson Community College, which is now Jackson College. As part of the Arts Festival, I was brought in to do a performance and workshop. And then the second one was just a few years ago for the Big Read program.
Sure.
And I was asked to do a Edgar Allan Poe impersonation. And do an autobiographical speech about my life and then read some selections from some of his works.
Okay.
So I dyed my hair and colored my mustache and tried to take on the physical appearance of Poe as much as I could.
Sure.
And I read two large biographies and put together an extended monologue about his life in the first person, and also read excerpts from his poems and his stories.
Wow. Was it fun? That sounds like that would be a fun thing to do.
Oh, well, acting is fun. The challenge is working through the difficult parts, right? So, you know, I knew Poe. I knew of his work. I'd studied a little bit of his work. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know a lot about him, and I certainly didn't know a lot about his life, right? So now I had to pretend to be him, right? So I had to do some research. So I purchased several biographies and read and then had to try to figure out which parts to put in and which parts to leave out, and then, you know, had to edit it and so on. It's a tremendously rewarding experience for those people who really enjoy acting. You know, if you don't like acting or you just like improvising, everybody kind of improvises, right? You make things up as you go along. But to improvise on stage or to act on stage takes considerable skill and training and experience, or at least to do it well. And so for some people, they start to study and they realize, this is really not for me. I like it. I like watching it. I like admiring the actors that I enjoy their work. But for me to actually do it is really too much of a challenge in one way or another. Other people who really do enjoy performance and enjoy acting, yes, it is. It's a joyful form of work, even when you're performing difficult or tragic roles. It's very rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was a, I guess, complicated person.
You mean Poe?
Yeah.
Well, yes, he did have a drinking problem.
Yeah.
And that was something that probably shortened his life considerably.
Sure.
That's what all the evidence I read led me to believe. He was an individual who was brilliant. I mean, he was one of the individuals who started the detective novel genre.
Mm-hmm.
He was also a poet. He was also interested in and was one of the forerunners of the science fiction novel. And so he went through several different phases in his life. He was in the military for a short period of time. He was at university for a period of time. And he had a singular vision, as most great artists do. They see aspects of reality that they want to focus in on. So he had to work his way to the point where he could concentrate fully on his writing. He wrote quite a body of work, quite an extensive collection. Of course, not only science fiction and detective, but what we would today call horror. But what Poe did, which was very much like what Shakespeare did, is he didn't simply show you the horror or the tragedy, but he examined the psychology and the forces that brought the tragedy or the horror about. He took you into their internal lives so that you began to understand them, right? In a similar way that, say, Freud would try to understand the people who were in the asylum who he was treating.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is not so much to scare you, although some of the moments certainly are frightening, but to take you into this world of this highly dysfunctional person who has this tragic drive, right? I'm thinking of the Cask of Amontillado, right? In that case, for revenge and murder. So he takes you into this life and examines it in minute detail. Even though he did have a severe alcohol problem, he was certainly not. He was a very benevolent man, and he wanted himself to be happy. He wanted other people to be happy. He had several romantic relationships and marriages, you know. And so he was trying to make his point. But he himself was nowhere near like those characters that he wrote about.
Right.
But he did have that kind of insight,
into that character, the outsider, the oppressed person, the person who is confused or does not fit into society. And so many of his characters were like that. Mm-hmm. He also wrote about spiritual subjects as well. He was into that concept of ghosts and communicating with spirits who have of people who have died. And so the ghost story was another genre that he helped to develop as well. And so he explored that as well.
Wow. Of all the characters that you have assumed, shall we say, what was your favorite, most meaningful, maybe not even favorite, but one that kind of impacted you as a person the most? You think it was Poe or was it somebody else?
Well, that's always hard to say. excuse me. When you take on a role, you try to get involved with it as deeply as possible. Mm-hmm. So that you understand the character and can portray him as accurately as possible. And, of course, comedy is very different than drama. I guess I would have to say one of my favorite comic roles was the role I played in Dinosaurus of the archaeologist. I got a chance to work with Mike Cochran, one of our former students here, as well as talk to and interact with 3D dinosaurs in our virtual theatricality production. That was a favorite role of mine. I enjoyed that immensely. The dinosaurs never missed their cue. You know, they were always right on because they were projections and they were pre-recorded. And so it forced you to be very precise in your acting because they did it exactly the same way each time. So that was one of my favorite comic roles. One of my favorite dramatic roles, although it was very challenging to me, and I never felt that I actually mastered the role, but was the character of Old Man in The Playboy of the Western World. And it's an old Irish play by Singh. And it is an older man whose son goes to another town and brags that he's killed me, but he hasn't. And I come back and engage in him again when he has tried to kind of make himself popular by spreading this vicious rumor. Very complicated character, comic elements to it, but certainly dramatic as well. And the Irish, not so much the Irish dialect, although that's challenging too, but the syntax and the vocabulary that Singh wrote in was very challenging to me. And so I was struggling with making that feel real natural to myself. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure that it came across to the audience better than I felt about it, but I never quite felt that I could feel completely comfortable with his vocal delivery. And so that's always something I look at and say, yes, a very rewarding role, a very enjoyable role, but also one that left me feeling that, okay, if I did anything like this again, I know where to start from now and hopefully could do a little bit better.
Okay. All right. That makes perfect sense. Okay. How about as a some sort of a director? What do you feel is one of the most difficult and most rewarding, if that's the same piece?
Sure. Well, I should say my master's degree is in directing. That's where my primary training is, but I trained a lot in technical production, and so I do scenic design and technical production as well. I'll start with the technical production. A number of years ago, around 8 years ago or something like that, we did... the musical version of The Who's Tommy, the double album from the 1960s.
I saw that.
Where did you see it?
Here.
Oh, you saw it here. Yeah, yeah. Well, it was on Broadway.
Right.
It was at Stratford, at the Stratford Festival in Canada. What I really enjoyed about that and what I felt we really, really accomplished was that sense of moving back and forth in time, because the story takes place post-World War II, but there are flashbacks into World War II. And so along with my student and faculty designers, we created projections to help with those flashbacks. We created silhouettes. We had a wonderful choreographer who created stupendous movement for it. I choreographed one of the dances myself. I played a small role in it. We had a wonderful assistant technical director, Mr. Alex Carr, who did some wonderful scenic painting and made some wonderful suggestions for developments in the set. Mm-hmm. And so scenographically, I felt wonderful mm-hmm. about what we were able to accomplish in that show. It's always a very collaborative process, and when you're working with wonderful people, the results are even more wonderful.
Right, right.
And then as a director, gosh, that's a tough one. Romeo and Juliet, I really enjoyed, a wonderful cast, wonderful crew. This past spring, we did a comedy, Almost Maine, again, a wonderful, wonderful cast. The Threepenny Opera, I enjoyed that very much. It's hard because, you know, how do you compare Shakespeare to something contemporary? They're so different.
Yes.
Right? They're different experiences. Yeah. And so it's like, okay, how do you compare them? You know, all you can look to is, well, how close did we come to doing a really superb job with it?
Mm-hmm.
And how much did the students learn through the process? We did Chekhov's The Seagull, another great cast, wonderful production. So all of these come from different parts of the world or different eras. They have different feels to them. You know, I enjoy working on them, but I always look forward to working on the next one, because I feel that each production I learn something from. I make that a conscious intention
mm-hmm.
To try to learn something new with
right.
each production.
Right.
And then, of course, the actors, the technicians, the designers, the staff, they add their creativity to the process, and it becomes something that is a collaboration among those individuals, even though obviously people have specific realms of expertise and responsibility, it becomes a collaborative process in which you can share your ideas and your experiences, as well as learn from watching and listening and to others. And when you do that, it becomes a wonderful educational experience mm-hmm. as well as a better experience for the audiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I've always held the belief that you need to learn something new every day. If you didn't, why'd you get mm-hmm. out of bed?
Sure, sure.
So I can see that's even more dramatic, pardon the pun, when you're dealing with theater production. And the
yes.
challenge, too, of going from a different genre, if you will,
mm-hmm.
going from comedy to tragedy to mm-hmm. musical to something. The stage set, I saw Love Letters at the Fisher,
mm-hmm.
and I've never seen such a simple set.
Ah.
It was a 6-foot, 8-foot table,
mm-hmm.
and they sat there, two chairs, and mm-hmm. they sat there at the table, and either didn't memorize or just wanted the books there, the notebooks there with sure. with the script, and basically turned the pages as they went. Mm-hmm. It was up to you as an audience member mm-hmm. to put yourself into the various time frames that they were talking about, because it was flashing back in
right.
time and talking about different things that had happened at that point. So that, and then when you talked about Tommy, that was one of the things that struck me as to how complex that whole thing mm-hmm. was. That was a very complex stage. It was a very, I could tell that there was so much that had gone into it. It was just the exact opposite of a table and two chairs.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which shows you that you can do it either way or any place in between.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You
mm-hmm.
know, I know that there are a lot of schools that don't have a lot of budget for production, but you don't really need the budget,
mm-hmm.
right? All you really need is a space,
mm-hmm.
right? And the scripts, wherever they come about, whether you write them or you buy them or whatever you do. And the students and someone to guide them through the process and someone to shape it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last part that you need is an audience. You need those parents and neighbors and friends
right.
to come and see it. And then with a table and a couple of chairs, you can do a show.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. You mentioned VTL. Could you mm-hmm. talk to that whole subject a little bit?
Sure. Well, the VTL was the brainchild of Dr. George Popovich, who was here for 35 years as the chair of the theater department, who just recently retired this May. He'll be coming back to teach part-time, but he's no longer chair and no longer full-time. He developed the VTL. It took approximately 9 years from the conception of the idea to its first production, because it's a very complex, highly technical form of theater. The Virtual Theatricality Lab, that's the VTL, works with motion capture, stereoscopic projection, which we call 3D. If you go to see a 3D movie, that's what you're seeing, and green screening, which you use a green background, and then you record an actor doing or saying something, and then you take that actor and you plop a different background behind him. So, of course, that's done in film considerably. And integrate that with live performance, live actors performing on stage in front of a live audience. And you have a different approach to theater that unifies some elements from film performance together with elements of live stage performance. And so the VTL was a lab with classes, and over the course of the next approximately 15 years after that first nine, put on three performances that utilized this technology in huge ways. The first was Shakespeare's The Tempest, set in outer space. So it was a science fiction adaptation of the piece. The second was Carol Churchill's The Skryker, which is set in early 21st century London or late 20th century London. It's about two English class working girls who are pursued by a shape-shifting demon. And then the third one, Dinosaurus, which is a children's show about two archaeologists who accidentally fall into a cave where there are some live dinosaurs, and then the dinosaurs talk and move. And so those were the three productions that the VTL mounted in the course of its history. Groundbreaking productions in a lot of ways, in the sense that they used and taught these unique technologies to undergraduate students in theater and film, so that they could use them in their performance modalities, whether it be on screen or whether it be on the live stage. And recently, the Royal Shakespeare Company in London did a version of The Tempest that was kind of a sci-fi fantasy version and used some very similar techniques to what we had done. And so Broadway, off-Broadway, and professional theater is using projection and motion capture and green screen more and more as elements in certain productions, in the productions that it would work for. That was the legacy of the VTL, in short.
Okay. And let's talk, too, about the this season, this current season. Summer Stock, we had Almost Maine, which was, I think I saw it when it was about 90 degrees out.
Yes, exactly.
And I felt sorry for the cast with their coats and coats. And a couple people I know had, three, four, five layers going. Mm-hmm. And
That's acting. That's the glamorous life. Yes.
And that was a wonderful, wonderful production. And you had a term for it. Is it black box seating?
Yes, the black box format is usually done in a small room or a medium-sized room, which is painted black just so that the lights don't just bounce all over the place and you're looking at the door to the bathroom instead of on the stage. But black box can be done anywhere. We did it on our proscenium stage with the audience seated in very close proximity to the actors. And so it's a wonderful opportunity for that intimacy, which only theater can give. And so, yes, it's a very small show, only four people in the cast who played 19 different characters.
Wow.
And it's a romantic comedy, so the intimacy fits with the theme and the approach to the show. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, that was our spring show in June, and it was our first Summer Stock production where we used alumni and guest artists along with current students to assist these students in understanding how professional actors work, how disciplined they are, how consistent they are, how creative they are, their wonderful technique in terms of creating character and voice. And so it's a wonderful opportunity for our students as well as for some of our alumni and others to perform.
And right now we are seeing Shooting Stars.
Shooting Stars is our current production. It runs one more weekend. And it is a comedy drama that takes place in the 60s about a female basketball team. It's directed by Mary Bremer Beer, and it runs this Friday and Saturday at 8 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m. And it has more students in it, so it's more of a student-oriented production, but a very nice one. And again, it's done in the black box format, so audience members will be seated right up close to the performers and have that wonderful opportunity to experience them.
Okay. And this is a women's basketball team about to take on a men's basketball team.
Well, it's sort of a takeoff on the Harlem Globetrotters, right? Who were the comic basketball team in the 60s and 70s, who would play professional teams but play them as comedians, right? Mm-hmm. They were very skilled. They could do all sorts of tricks and gags, and at the same time, they could play basketball.
Very well.
Yeah. Very well, right? So that's the premise of this show, that it's a female Harlem Globetrotters.
Ah.
And so they're coming in to do their exhibition game against a men's team, and the entire show takes place in the locker room before the game. So that's where we are. And so the team arrives, they're on tour, so they get there in the afternoon, they're going to play an evening game, right? And so we get to know the players and the coach a little bit. The entire cast is composed of just the players, the coach and the assistant coach. And we get to know something about them as people, and about the challenges of their lives and about their hopes and dreams as well. So it's a very interesting, dynamic comedy drama written by Molly Newman and produced here for the first time.
Looking forward to that.
First time on our stage.
Right. Definitely looking forward to that one. And then Seussical, the musical's coming.
That's coming up this fall. Once a year, we do a Theater for Young Audiences production focused on our young people. And this year, it is a musical as well. Seussical, the musical, based on the works of Dr. Seuss, with lots of fun song and dance. Our auditions are coming up the 22nd, 24th, and 28th of August, so very soon. We're auditioning actors, singers, and dancers from the age of 5 to 75. The performances will be November 10th through the 19th on the weekends, and then there will also be a couple of school matinees, the dates for which haven't been chosen yet. And we bring students in from the schools in the Tri-County area to see our young audiences shows. Mary Bremerbeer, again, is the director of this one. And if you're interested in auditioning or in further information or in making a reservation for your school group, call Mary at 586-939-1687. Again, that's 586-939-1687.
Okay. And you said anyone is available or anyone who
eligible.
Good. I lose words.
Oh, so do I.
Oh, man. Yes. Anyone is eligible to audition. And you said the age is wide open, too.
Yes. Because of this particular show, it uses both an adult chorus and a children's chorus.
I see. Okay.
So there are the principal characters, of course, the Cat in the Hat and the others. But there's also a male and female adult and a male and female children's chorus in the show.
Okay.
So we're looking for actors of all ages, right? And not everybody has to sing and dance. So even if that's something that you're not good at or haven't done before, but you're interested in, or you have a child who's interested in it, they can come out and audition as well, because there are non-singing, non-dance roles too.
Okay. Are people who are not students able to participate in some of the productions?
Yes. Each production is kind of unique. For Almost Maine, we had students with alumni and guest artists. In Shooting Stars, we have mostly students with a couple of guest artists. In the Seussical, of course, we'll have students who will be playing some of the principal roles. They'll also have to audition. Everyone auditions, right, for placement by the director. But those people who are interested, who are not either current students or intending to be students, can also audition, and then we get you registered and involved in a different way.
Okay.
So we've got an avenue for that as well. And this production, I should mention, is a collaboration with the Dearborn Performing Arts Center down the road, where Mary Bremer teaches the family theater classes for young people. So we're collaborating together on this production.
Okay. One thing, too, that I wanted to talk about today is to talk about the theater as an educational opportunity. So there are any number of courses that one can take to I guess, where do you go with that? Is it a two-year degree that you can obtain from here, or some sort of certificate, or how does it work when we talk about theater?
Well, it can work in lots of different ways. Students who are not theater majors can take theater appreciation or acting one or one of the other classes as a liberal arts elective, right, towards their general electives.
Okay.
If an individual does want to be a theater major, there is, of course, some required core courses as well as electives, as well as the gen eds. That would culminate in an associate's degree. And that associate's degree would prepare you to transfer to a four-year college like Eastern or U of M or the University of Detroit Mercy or Oakland or any university both in and out of state that has a theater program. Some people, of course, choose to go out and work professionally with just the AA. We try to encourage more training because, of course, the better trained you are, the more job opportunities you have. But some people go out and do work professionally after just the associate's degree. And a lot of people go on to their four-year degrees, and some people go on to their master's degrees. Now that George has retired, we are actually hiring one of our alumni who has his MFA in acting from Wayne State as one of the instructors to replace George, Brandon Grants. He'll be starting in the fall semester. So there are lots of opportunities to study both in the acting track, the technical production track, or the directing track of the Associates of Arts in Theater. So we've got people who work in all three of those tracks, who study in all three of those tracks.
Okay.
And then people go on to, if they don't go on to their four-year university or after they do so, they end up working, some of them work in educational theater. They'll work in elementary schools or in high schools directing the theater program,
okay,
teaching the theater classes. They can work in what are called roadhouses. The roadhouses are the local theaters that bring in tours, like the Ford Center for the Performing Arts.
Oh, I see.
Like the Macomb Center for the Performing Arts in Macomb. So some people work in roadhouses. Some people go out and audition in the theater community. We have lots of small theaters scattered around the metropolitan area and Ann Arbor. And people go and they audition or they do technical work in one of the small local professional or semi-professional theaters. Or people can attempt to move to the next higher level, which would be either regional theater or touring companies or working in Hollywood. We recently had an alumni, he was an alumni from a number of years back. He graduated around 10 years ago or so. He had a small part in La La Land, for instance. So if that's what people want to do, they can do that. Of course, it's very hard to get up into that higher echelon of the industry, and only a few people make it. But people can work locally or regionally, mm-hmm, or in educational theater or in touring houses, or they can use it as an adjunct to whatever their major professional course may be.
Mm-hmm.
It teaches a lot of skills. It teaches collaboration, creativity, the ability to have confidence in front of people and work in difficult or unusual or creative work environments, and still be able to navigate those environments. And of course, it teaches a lot about literature as well,
right,
and history, and psychology, because of course those fields are highly interwoven in what happens on stage or screen.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, actors move back and forth between doing stage work and screen work. Most actors do some of both. And independent film, of course, is now easier than it ever was because of the technology. And so many of our students like to do independent film work as well as whatever other projects they might be involved in.
Mm-hmm. As you were talking, a couple things came to mind, and one of which is how, as a director or possibly as an actor,
mm-hmm,
you have two people. Maybe you're one of the two people, or maybe they're cast members, and they absolutely detest each other. How do we make them come off okay on the stage?
Well, it's not something that you want to avoid. When you're working with anybody, you're going to find that you have things about how someone else works that you like, mm-hmm. and things that you may not like at all. But if you're a professional, you go in and you do your job. So that's kind of the starting point.
Exactly.
Right. But in addition, right, you have to take whatever is given to you by the other actor, say, if it's a conflict between actors, and you have to use your energy in such a way that it creates the character that you have to create, regardless of the personal relationship that you may or may not have with the other actor.
Right.
In community theater, oftentimes people are performing with their friends or acquaintances, people that they know, people that they like, people that they enjoy spending time with. That's one of the functions of community theater, among other things. But in professional theater, you are working with people you know, people you don't know, people you've just met, people you like, people you don't like. People who have a very different working style from you, as well as people who have very similar working styles. And because it's a people-intensive business, you're working with people a lot in a lot of different ways. Sure, it can become difficult at times, but clear communication and good professional focus, meaning focus on the work, right, is what makes you, it's one of the things that makes you a professional.
Exactly, exactly. And I'm sure that that's happened. We don't need to go into that kind of war story. And it's like any other workplace situation, too.
Right, right. And if students get into that kind of conflict, the first thing I say is, well, try to work it out by yourselves, right? You're adults and you're training to be professionals. Try to work it out by yourselves. And in those rare cases where they can't, then I negotiate that. But that's a very, very rare circumstance.
That's good to hear, actually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If someone is interested in either being a student or just taking a couple of the theater courses, what's the best way to do that? How do we get in touch with whomever?
Well, you're more than welcome to call me. My number is 313-845-9817. 845-9817. I'll be happy to help you any way I can. You can also, of course, go to our website, and you can go to the regular course listings under theater, or you can go to our theater arts webpage, theater.hfcc.edu, and get information there as well. If you're interested in being a theater major, I would encourage you to contact myself because I can help you with the specifics of that. If you're just going to take one or two classes, I'm sure that the advisors or the counselors can just kind of point you in the right direction together with the online catalog.
Okay. Do you encourage people to take the classes just for fun, maybe one or two classes just for fun?
Oh, sure. Theater Appreciation and Acting One are a lot of fun, as well as being very educational. And so you learn a lot. Theater Appreciation is just kind of a general overview. You learn a little bit about directing and technical production and history and style. And Acting One is about the beginning of learning how to act. And so you do scene study there, working both alone and with scene partners in the class. So it's a lot of fun. It's very enlightening, and it's very cathartic. It's a great way of releasing the other parts of your personality that you can't release necessarily in the other parts of your life.
Okay, that's fair. All right. Jerry, thank you so, so much for coming in today. Any parting words?
Well, I would just encourage anybody who's thinking about doing theater in any capacity to take the leap and give it a try. And like with anything, if you don't quite make it the first time, or if it doesn't quite feel right the first time, don't let that stop you. If that's something that you really want to try to do, then keep on going until you find your niche.
And we're talking about all ages.
That's true.
Yep.
That's very true.
Okay. Thank you again so much for being here with Impact. And thank you all for listening to Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. The views and opinions expressed on Impact are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
WebAdvisor, a program allowing students and staff access to college-related information. Through WebAdvisor, you are able to register for classes, view grades, track financial aid, print class schedules, and much more. Log into WebAdvisor by going to my.hfcc.edu/webadvisor or from the homepage hfcc.edu.
Okay, so Sarah, I'm dropping you off at Emily's?
Yep.
And Josh, you're going to?
Soccer, Dad. Soccer practice.
Right. Oh, by the way, I just wanted to let you know when I pick you both up, I'll be wearing my short shorts.
What?
No!
Yep, and my dorky dad hat, and I'm gonna do my dad dance for all your friends. They'll love it!
Seriously? Why?
Because I like my short shorts. Of course, I could be talked out of it if you guys would just buckle up your seatbelts without giving me a hard time.
It's important to get your kids to buckle up for safety, no matter what it takes. And sometimes, all it takes is your parental powers of persuasion.
Okay, okay, we're buckling up.
See, all buckled.
Good choice. I'll just have to do my dad dance at dinner time.
What, what?
No!
Do what you have to make sure your kids are wearing their seatbelts, even on short drives. Never give up until they buckle up. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council. Visit safercar.gov/kidsbuckleup for more information.
Are you interested in the world of media? Have you ever turned on the radio or watched a news broadcast and thought to yourself, hey, that looks like fun? Well, Henry Ford College has a program that is just right for you. HFC provides a telecommunication program that gives you real-world hands-on experience with the skill set and equipment used in the film, TV, and radio broadcasting industry. You will earn an Associate in Arts degree while learning about film history and criticism, digital audio and video editing and production, media writing and performance, and broadcast journalism. You will also have the opportunity to join Henry Ford College's very own radio station, 89.3 WHFR.FM, a fully functional and FCC licensed station. For more information about the telecommunication program, please contact Susan McGraw at scmcgraw@hfcc.edu or call 313-845-9842.
Trinity House Theater, located in Livonia, Michigan, is a non-profit concert venue where you can enjoy the wonderful experience of hearing live music in an intimate setting. For more than 30 years, Trinity House has hosted hundreds of artists from around the country, as well as local musicians, including singer-songwriters, folk artists, fingerstyle guitar players, and indie groups. In addition to a wide array of musical concerts, Trinity House offers local musicians a chance to showcase their talents with an open stage night on the 1st, 3rd, and 5th Tuesday of every month. Plus, tasty refreshments are available for you to enjoy at every performance. So come on out and enjoy a fabulous show at Trinity House Theater, right on 6 Mile Road, just west of I-275. For a schedule of upcoming concerts or for information on booking a show, visit trinityhousetheater.org.
And you too can be dancing with Daddy G every Tuesday afternoon from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Malt Shop, right here on WHFR.FM. The jukebox will be spinning the platters from the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and join me, Daddy G.